Continuing Leelas from the 8th canto, this is the Kheer Samudra Manthan Leela, the churning of the milk ocean that was performed by the demons and demigods. And in this story of churning the milk ocean, starts with a very, in the beginning, there's a very interesting story about King Indra's exploits. He's a very famous personality in the Puranas because he is the big cheese of the universe. He's the administrator of universal affairs. It's kind of like Brahma's like the emperor, and Indra's like the king. He's always getting in trouble due to his pride and his lust. So these are two products of Rajagun, Kam and Dumba, pride and lust. Because of his pride, he doesn't show proper respect to his guru or to other saintly people. Because he's a king, and kings are supposed to show respect and be humble before the Brahmins and seek their guidance and advice and take their blessings and ashirvad and be guided in yagis and pujas and how to administrate a godly kingdom and take advantage of the wise counsel of the learned, experienced Brahmins so they can rule a very peaceful and successful kingdom. This was the interplay and dynamic exchange between the kings and the Brahmins. The kings would maintain the sages and rishis and Brahmins, and they would engage in welfare activities for the benefit of the king, his ruling, his kingdom, and all the citizens and praja within it. They would benefit everyone. The sages, rishis, and Brahmins would benefit the king that they were basically working for or patronized by performing daily rituals and yagyas and pujas and samskaras for the benefit of the people, to lead people on the proper spiritual path, God-given way of life, the Varnashram Dharma system, Dharmart Kaman Moksha. But Indra invariably, time and time again, he repeatedly succumbs to his pride and his lust and defiles some sage's wife, or he fails to respect a Brahmin or a sannyasi, or a rishi, or a sage, or a tapasvi. Because of his unlimited pride and lust, he gets himself in a lot of trouble. So, of course, the Bhagavatam is teaching us all these different qualities, how they're not good to have all these qualities. They get us in a lot of trouble, and they're anti-devotional, and really not even human qualities. So there's lots of good examples in the Bhagavatam. Many good examples of what not to do. So Indra is a classic good example of what not to do. So this is another story of his pride. And this time he showed his pride to the wrong Muni. It happened to be Durvasa Muni, who's not a lightweight by any means. He has all mystic cities and can become invisible and turn people into frogs or anything at a moment's notice. Durvasa Muni once saw Indra cruising around the world in his elephant sports car, Airavata. And the rishi wanted to show some mercy, so he offered one of his prasadi malas to Indra. But King Indra, who doesn't care for anyone, he accepted the garland and put it on the trunk of his elephant. But because the elephant doesn't appreciate the value of Guru Prasad, he playfully threw it down and crushed it under his feet. It was quite irreverent, but he's an animal after all. But the cause of that misbehavior was Indra. Durvasa Muni became completely enraged, seeing this insulting behavior, so he cursed Indra to become a garib, become poverty-stricken. Sometime later, the demons attacked the demigods with some snake weapons, very interesting weapon. serpent weapons and slaughtered millions of demigods. And this is all because of the curse of Durvasa. The whole demigods lost all their wealth. In fact, the whole three worlds became poverty-stricken. They couldn't even perform Vedic rituals. Everything was so poor, they couldn't buy any ghee or anything. The demigods tried to find a solution. They couldn't, so they went to Lord Brahma, who resides in the peak of Mount Sumeru, and sought his counsel and advice. Hearing the plight of the demigods, Brahma became compassionate and absorbed his mind in meditating on Lord Vishnu, Shirdakshai Vishnu. While meditating upon the Lord, he became very effulgent and inspired. And then he replied, after being inspired within the heart with some assurance from Lord Vishnu, then Lord Brahma reiterated that and explained it to the demigods, that the Lord is equal to everyone. But he's kind to the demigods, he will surely bestow good fortune upon us. And then he took the demigods to Shvetadvip, the Vaikuntha planet within the material world, where Shirdakshai Vishnu resides. Although the Brahma never had direct darshan of the Lord, although he's repeatedly gone there to visit, he's never received darshan of Shirdakshai Vishnu in person. But he simply offers prayers to the Lord from the shores, from the beach or the shore of that vast ocean of kheer or milk surrounding Lord Vishnu's planet. And the demigods went with him. At least he has some access, because Brahma is so qualified and so pure and advanced that his prayers at least are heard by the Lord, and the Lord responds to his prayers. And he said at that time, Lord Brahma prayed to him, "Please accept our obeisances. This entire cosmos has come out of the water. Only because of water, living entities can live. This water everywhere in the universe is actually the semen of the Supreme Lord. The moon is the source of food grains and the Lord of all vegetation. The moon is the mind of the Supreme Lord. Fire is created for yajna, and fire is also existing in the depths of the ocean to produce wealth. It is present in the stomach to digest food, and fire creates secretions that maintain the body. Fire is the mouth of God. The sun god is the eye of the Supreme Lord. All living entities receive their vital force, their pran, from the air. The air is that vital force is the Lord." And he went on to explain how all the different directions, and he said, we wish to see you in your personal form, although you're everywhere found in the universe. By your sweet will you appear in various incarnations and perform transcendental activities that we could never conceive of. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, my Lord. Suddenly a blinding effulgence appeared before Brahma and all the demigods, and after some time the effulgence subsided, and then Brahma and Shiva and everyone had darshan of the Supreme Lord Shirdakshai Vishnu. They all fell to the ground, offered dandavats and prayers to the Lord. Directly now they're seeing him before him. "Just seeing you, we've achieved the goal of our life," said Brahma. "You know everything. Please suggest a means to deliver us from these demons." The Lord spoke in response in a deep voice, "To listen tightly to what I'm saying. To fulfill one's own desire, it's so important. Sometimes one may have to make an alliance with his enemies. For the sake of self-interest, I advise you to act according to the logic of the snake and mouse." What would this be called? Sarp Musika Naya, I guess. Sarp Musika Naya, the logic of the snake and the mouse. And here's a story about that logic. Once someone caught a snake and put it in a basket. Then they caught a mouse and they put the mask and the mouse in the same basket. But the snake is the food of the mouse. So now that the mouse is trapped inside the basket, the snake can eat the mouse and be happy. But the snake cannot bite his way through the basket. He has no appetite or taste for straw or the proper teeth to make a hole in that basket. So the snake was very smart and very snaky. He made an alliance with the mouse. Mouse and snake are natural enemies. So now for his own self-interest, this is the example of the principle. Vishnu advised the demigods to fulfill your desire, to accomplish your plan. Sometimes you have to do business with the demons or do business with an enemy. Even devotees, they often do business with demons in order to make a profit to serve Krishna. It happens that way. So now the demigods have to do business with the demons, with the asuras, in order to gain back their kingdom. So they entered into an alliance. They had to cooperate on some business venture. It was a joint venture. Sura-asura joint venture. Demigod-demon joint venture. They entered business together to get a mutual product, the nectar of immortality, which they both could share and both desired. So the snake was very intelligent. He said, "Listen, if I eat you, then I'll be stuck in this basket, and I don't know what they're going to do with me in the future, maybe kill me. So I'll make you a deal. Since you can bore a hole in this basket with your tiny little nibbling teeth, and I can't eat a hole in this basket, if you make a hole in the basket, then both of us can escape this captivity." But actually, there was an ulterior motive that was not revealed to the innocent mouse. The snake was thinking, yes, the mouse will bore a hole through this basket with his little mouse teeth. And before he finishes that hole and it's big enough, then I will eat the mouse, get my stomach filled, and go escape through that hole and be free. So demigods, why don't you make an alliance, Lord Vishnu said. Make an alliance with the demons to produce nectar. And he told them how to make the nectar. At the base medium, it's kind of like a milkshake. You have some milk as a base medium, then you put in ice cream and fruits and dates and nuts and vanilla powder and cinnamon or whatever else, and mix it all, blend it all together, churn it all together, mix it all up in the mixie, then you get a very fantastic fruit and nut milkshake. So the milk was the ocean of milk. That's the base milk, and then they wanted to make some nectar milkshake, Amrit milkshake. So he told them to put different ingredients in the milkshake. Vishnu said, "You throw kinds of vegetables, grass, creepers, and all kinds of oshadi and medicinal herbs and plants into this milk base and mix it all up and drink the nectar. But what's going to be the churning rod?" Well, like in a blender, you have these little blades and electricity. The power is electricity. And the churning rod is little metal blades inside the mixie. But in this case, the electricity is the physical strength of the demons and the demons and devotees. That's the electricity or power source. And then the wire, the power wire, connecting the two power sources is the snake-like, wire-like, snake-like body of Vasuki. Then the metal blades to churn up the milkshake of nectar milkshake, Amrit Dood, is the mountain, this metal mountain, this golden mountain, Mount Mandara. So that's what they did. The churning rod was Mount Mandara, and the rope for churning was Vasuki the snake. "Don't worry, the demons work very hard to get the nectar, but by arrangement you'll get the benefit." And then Vishnu gave them some very good advice which applies to all of us. Especially all of us, because we have a tendency when we take on some endeavor or we take on some service, we try to perform some service for Guru or for Krishna, We become frustrated because of the motive passion, and then we become angry. We're very passionate, so if that service cannot be performed quickly or effortlessly, then we lose our determination, we become impatient, we get hot-headed, we get angry and frustrated, and so impatient, we lose our determination to even stop the service, or do not complete it, or if we do complete it, we complete it haphazardly and do a half-baked job just to get the job done, but it's not very devotional, nor is it very perfect. So this Vishnu, understanding the nature of conditioned souls, like the demigods or human beings, like all of us, he gave some very potent advice. He said, listen, every task, every service, every duty, every job, every action that you have to perform, every service or guru or every action, it can be successfully done with patience and a cool head. Keep your head cool, Shanti. Keep patient and keep a cool head. But when one is performing an activity or Guru Seva or Krishna Seva or any kind of service or job, if he becomes agitated with anger, then he will not attain his goal. Whatever the demons ask for, you should give to them. When you do this churning, it will produce a poison from that milk ocean called Kalakut. But don't be disturbed by that, because if you keep churning, other products will come from the milk ocean. But don't be greedy to enjoy them. Keep your mind fixed on the real purpose. After giving this advice, Vishnu disappeared. Everyone offered obeisances. They went to Bali Maharaj, the king of the demons. So they sat down and had hatched a plan together, the demons and the demigods. So they joined together as a joint venture. And this joint venture, they decided, yes, Bali thought it was a good idea, Indra thought it was a good idea, the demons and demigods thought it was a good idea to work together to produce nectar, which they could all enjoy. So somehow they made all this arrangement. When they were trying to carry this Mount Mandara, was so heavy that many of the demons became worn out, demigods and demigods fatigued, and many became crushed by the weight of it, couldn't even lift it. So then Vishnu glanced at everyone and brought them back to life. Then they got renewed strength, and actually what happened is that Lord Vishnu easily lifted Mandara Mountain and put it on Garuda's back, and he took all the demigods and demons with him, and he carried them over, ferried the whole load over to the Milk Ocean. Garuda unloaded the mountain from his shoulders, and then Vasuki came to be the churning rope. So then he coiled himself around the Mandara Mountain, which acted as a pivot rod or a churning rod, like when you churn yogurt into butter and you wrap it around with a rope and pull it back and forth, and the rod twists back and forth and churns the yogurt. So the churning rope was this body, this rope-like body of the snake Vasuki. So Lord Ajita Vishnu, on behalf of the demigods, he held the snake's head. Even though it's a more dangerous part, he thought it was better to hold on to the snake's head so he wouldn't do anything nasty, bite anybody. The demons didn't like the idea of holding on the tail, which was pretty inauspicious. And they protested that it's very inauspicious for highly placed kings of the demons like themselves. So they were pretty adamant, the demons, and they didn't like the idea. So then Lord Vishnu smiled, and then he grasped Vasuki's tail. So all the demigods and demons were actually cousins, because they're all the sons of Kasyapa. Kasyapa Muni was one of the great progenitors, and he had two wives, Aditi and Diti. And Diti, of course, is the mother of the demons, and Aditi was the mother of the demigods, but the father was the same, Kasyapa. So some of his children from his devotee wife were devotees, demigods from Aditi, and some were his children were demons, like usual families, and they were born from Diti, his second wife. So the mountain was just sitting on this milk ocean, had no support, so it kept sinking. So then Krishna manifested a beautiful avatar, Kurma avatar, Keshavadrita Kurma Sharira. And then he picked up the mountain. Kurma got a nice back scratch of the Mandara mountain. He was happy. Everybody was happy. Lord Vishnu held the mountain steady so it wouldn't wobble from side to side. He appeared on top of the mountain. So everybody was involved here. Kurma avatar, the demons, the demigods, Shiva, Brahma, everybody got involved. So they were encouraged by the Lord. So the demons and demigods were both encouraged by Lord Vishnu to churn the milk ocean. Vasuki got a little agitated because he was working so hard. He's a little disturbed because all the alligators and crocodiles in the ocean were getting agitated and he thought they might bite him. So he started breathing smoke and fire and all the demons got scorched. Anyway, they kept going. Lord Ajita also began vigorously. Lord Vishnu also churned the milk ocean. Then this halahal poison came up. And no one wanted to take that. Then Shiva agreed. Everyone prayed to him, and he agreed to. They glorified him. So he drank the Kalakuta poison and became famous as Nilakant Shiva after taking blessings from his wife. And of course, some poison fell from his mouth, and that became cobras and scorpions and poisonous drugs and other animals with poisonous bites. And they got back to churning. But after the poison came, something wonderful, Surabhi cow. And the rishis took charge of that. They wanted to get some good ghee for yagya. Then there was a horse, Uchai Shrava. So then Bali Maharaj wanted it. So King Indra said yes. It's very interesting. First came poison from the milk ocean, then came the mode of goodness. So poison is the mode of ignorance, destruction, killing, poison. So first the mode of ignorance came out in poison, and then the mode of goodness as a cow. From ignorance came goodness, and they churned more. Then passion came out as a horse. Horse very passionate. And when from the mode of goodness generated this Surabhi cow, then the mode of goodness sages and rishis took that for the mode of goodness yagyas and pujas, worshipping Lord Vishnu. And then the mode of passion produced, they churned the ocean into passion and got this horse, Uchai Shrava, who the passionate King Balimraj took possession of that. Then came a very powerful, less passionate animal, a very powerful kingly animal, Airavata, a four-tusked king of the elephants. So Indra, of course, took charge of that. Then came so many wonderful gems, Kaustubha money and Padma Marg money. Lord Vishnu took those as ornaments for his chest. Then came the Parijat flower. Then came the Apsaras, who were very beautiful. Then Rama, the goddess of fortune, appeared. She attracted everyone. But she's a source of beauty, wealth, and reputation. So Indra put a nice asan for the goddess of fortune. Then all the sacred rivers came there in personified forms, bringing pots of their own pure water in golden pots. And Lakshmi was worshipped in a very elaborate puja. She was walking here and there. Everyone was appreciating her beauty. She was looking as if she was going to pick out one of them for a consort. So she was examining the different personalities assembled there, all the great demigods and demons. And she saw that there were good qualities in some, but then they had other bad qualities. Some were very austere, but they were angry. Some had great knowledge, but they had material desires. Some were very great, but they were very lusty. So Lakshmi Devi could surmise that of all the demigods and demons, none of them were perfect. Though they had many good qualities, they also had bad qualities. No one had full knowledge of religion. And she found one demigod who was very religious and dharmic, but he was not kind to other living entities. Someone else is very renounced sannyasi, but he was not actually liberated. Someone else was very powerful, but he could not control time. someone else lived a very long life, but he didn't have good behavior. Someone else was qualified in all respects, but he was not a devotee. So then she decided, after deliberation, whom to accept as her husband. She thought that she decided Mukunda, Vishnu Narayan, was the only suitable candidate, because he was independent and did not really need her. So she placed the marriage garland around the neck of Narayan and stayed by his side. So everyone celebrated that union of Lakshmi and Narayan. The demons and Rakshasas, they got frustrated by losing the attention of Lakshmi. But then they got back to churning the ocean. Then after Lakshmi appeared, then, who was totally sattvic and Vishuddha, pure goodness, Vishuddha Sattva, then next thing they churned was another lady, one completely transcendental lady. Lakshmi came out of the ocean of churning. The next lady was a lady in charge of Tamagun, a goddess of liquor, Vruni Devi, who is the goddess of the drunkards. So the demons were very happy to take possession of this young girl because she's in charge of controlling the drunkards, as if they have any control. Next came a very beautiful young person, very attractive and elegant. He was Dhanvantari, a plenary portion of Vishnu. And he was, he was of course a doctor, father of Ayurveda, and he had a jug of nectar, and a demon snatched it from his hands and ran away with it. And the demigods are a little frustrated because it didn't seem like things were turning out their way. So he turned to Vishnu, he said, "Don't worry. By my yoga maya, I'll bewilder these demons and create a quarrel. Then you'll get to drink the nectar also." So as per the prediction, the demons started fighting over who can drink the nectar first. So it must be me. No, it must be you. Then while they were fighting, no one was drinking. So then the weaker ones, who saw they had no chance to beat up the bigger demons, they said, "Listen, we churn together, so the demigods should also get a share." So then, to solve the situation, through his yogamaya potency, Lord Vishnu manifested there as Mohini Murti, the form of illusion. Mo means illusion. Moha. Kam, Kro, Lo, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. So Moha means illusion, bewilderment, misconception, misunderstanding. So the personified transcendental form of all illusion, misconception, misunderstanding, bewilderment, appeared there as the consort of Lord Vishnu, the Shakti of Lord Vishnu, known as Mohini Murti, a very personified form of illusion. And as every man in this material world knows that, and even demigods know that, generally the form of a woman is also Mohini Murti. You can say Choti Mohini Murtis. Choti Mohini Murtis, because every single woman in this earth planet and every single Apsara and Gandharvi and all these other Ramboro and Tila Lotaman, Urvasi and all these celestial damsels, they have the mystic power and ability to completely bewilder a mind of a man, any man, and attract his full attention and completely enslave him and entrap him and defeat him and conquer him. No one is a jeet before the Choti Mohini Murtis of women of this world. So now the original bewildering woman appeared as the expansion Lord Vishnu. And it says that although she's depicted in a picture in the Bhagavatam as having a golden form, I guess they didn't want to depict her as a Negro or as a black lady. But it says that her complexion, she was actually dark blue, like Lord Vishnu. She had dark bluish-black complexion like a lotus flower. This is what the Bhagavatam was saying. She was not golden. She's very beautiful. She was like Shami. She was beautiful, but black. Black is beautiful. She was not golden-faced, white-faced. The tip of the standard features a beauty, large breasts and thin waist, and a beautiful fragrant body, restless eyes and beautiful hair. And every part of her body was perfectly attracted, her legs, neck, etc. Eyebrows moving seductively and smiling shyly. The demons were totally saturated and captivated with lusty desires. They became overwhelmed with the desire to enjoy her. They were contesting, the demons were previously contesting over drinking the nectar pot. But when they saw Mohini Murti, they thought this nectar is much more attractive. This pot of nectar or the nectar pots of her two breasts are totally more attractive to us than whatever kind of nectar is in this jeweled studded golden pot that we snatched from Dhanvantari, the god of medicine. So now Mohini started walking towards them, and they forgot everything, including the nectar pot. And they said, "Wow, look at this woman. What a most beautiful woman. She's so exquisite." Then they approached her full of lusty desires and started inquiring, "Hey, where have you come from? Are you married? You're so beautiful. I don't think you have a boyfriend. Why don't you give me your cell number? Let's meet." So they started glorifying her beauty and trying to seduce her. And then they, from their own mouths, the demigods, of course, it was all arranged by the Lord, they said, "Listen, Mohini, we can surely trust you. So why don't you put an end to this disagreement between all the demigods and the demons fighting over this nectar and the demigods not getting any. Why don't you divide the nectar as you think fit?" Everything was going according to plan. So then, very interesting, this is God as a woman. This is Mohini Murti, who's Shakti of Vishnu, consort of Vishnu. She said, quite frankly, she said, "Listen, boys, listen, sons of the demons, oh demons, or let's say sons of Kasyapa, which means the demons and devotees, I'm only a prostitute. Why do you have so much faith in me? You're going to put faith in a prostitute? A person who has any intelligence never puts his faith in a woman, especially a prostitute." So now these are very wise words spoken directly by God as the ultimate original female, Mohini Murti, the very Shakti of God. An intelligent person never puts his faith in a woman. This verse is in the Bhagavatam, in the 8th canto, chapter 9, verse 9, where Mohini addresses the demons. Katam kashyapa dayadha pumschalyam mahisangata vishwasam pandito jatu kamanishu nayatihi. The Mohini, Bhagavati Mohini, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, speaking truth through the mouth of his Mohini avatar, Bhagavati Mohini. Mohini said to the demons, "O demoniac sons of Kashyapa Muni, Kashyap Dayada, Kashyap Dayada, descendants of Kashyap Muni, I am only a prostitute. Pumschalyam." It's very interesting. This is a Sanskrit sandhi, combination of different words to make a new word. In other words, attractive, beautiful women, they make the mind of a man start walking, start wandering, start moving here and there, back and forth, yes, no, accept, reject, yes, 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 no, 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 yes, yes. So the mind is wandering, chakraman. The prostitute agitates the minds of men. Kamanishu nalyatihi. So she said, "I am only a prostitute. How is it How is it that you have so much faith in me? Vishwasam pandito jatu. A learned person, a pundit, never puts his faith in a woman. Nayatihi. Nayatihi. Indeed, he never puts his vishwas jatu. Vishwasam pandito jatu kamanishu nayatihi. First she says, I am a prostitute because of my, I'm just wandering here and there with no protector, no husband, no son, no father, and loosely wandering here so attractively and beautifully. And you're seeing me becoming possessed by lust to enjoy me and have me. So you're taking me to be a prostitute. A pumsh chalyam. So then she says, she's not now talking about prostitutes, but she's talking about kamani. Kamani shu. About women. And I said, okay, I'm a prostitute. She's saying, Mohini Murthy's saying, I'm a prostitute, demons. And especially you're seeing me like that. I am a prostitute, loitering here and there with no protection. No man, no husband, father, elder, son to protect me. So I'm appearing and moving and acting just like one, glancing here and there seductively at all of you. So on one level you can see me acting and behaving as a prostitute. But now let me advise you something about women as a category. You're supposed to be kings, the demons, Bali Maharaj, very intelligent, resourceful, intelligent, clever. How do you be a king? Even demon kings are very intelligent. You're supposed to be pundit, learned. Ravana was a demoniac king, born in a Brahmin family. He was a Chaturvedi. He knew all the Vedas, an extremely learned pundit. But his wisdom was conquered by his lust for Sita, to enjoy the goddess of fortune, Sita Devi, Ram's consort. So the demons are also very pundit. He said, you're pundits. You're the sons of the great Muni Kashyap and his wife Diti. Diti and Kasyap produced you, so you have a very illustrious father. He's very intelligent, great Muni Rishi, very thoughtful and learned. And you're his sons, you're also very learned. You're pundits also. Pundit demons. Don't you know? A learned person, Jatu, never at any time. Jatu kamanishu na yatihi. He never puts his faith, he never places his faith in a woman. So of course the modern women, or at least jivas, living entities or jivatmas, identifying with their external form as a woman, they may take issue with this verse from Bhagavatam. Oh, this is another chauvinistic statement from Swami Bhaktivedanta. Another chauvinistic statement exploiting women or defiling women, demeaning women by saying they're faithless and you can't trust them. But who's speaking here? Is it Bhaktivedanta Swami speaking, or is it some Hare Krishna sannyasi or GBC or preacher, some fanatic chauvinistic brahmachari or sannyasi or guru? No, it's a lady. It's the Adi Bhagavati, the Adi Shakti, the Lord's very Shakti. So who knows a woman better? Who knows a woman better than a woman? It takes one to know one. Who knows a lusty man better than another lusty man? Who knows a thief better than another thief? So who knows a woman better than a woman? So you can't blame, you can't say that Vishnu is chauvinistic, or the acharyas and gurus and brahmacharyas are chauvinistic. Mohini herself is saying it. She's saying, Vishwasam pandito jatu kamanishu na yatihi. This is a sabab or characteristic of women as a category that one should not put their faith in them. So we can accept that statement of the Bhagavatam, which is the Amalagyanam, Shastra Praman, is solid proof and evidence of absolute truth and reality. Or we can reject it and laugh it off as antiquated mythology, mythological chauvinism, male-dominated culture, patriarchal culture of India, subjugating and women to an inferior position, or we can accept that it's true and be very careful about putting our faith in women. Our faith should be in God, Guru and God. And that verse is there in actually in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.38, verse that Prabhupada often quoted, and he translates this term, parabhakti. He translates parabhakti as faith. Yasya deve parabhaktir yata deve tata guru taisyaite katita yarta prakasante mahatmanaha. Holding on to those great souls, mahatmas, who have an implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. The art, the Veda art, the objective, the value, the inside scoop, the essential truth, the art prakas, the import is revealed, manifested unto Mahatmana, to those great-minded Mahatmana. And we say Mahatma means great-souled, Mahatmana means great-minded, those spiritually enlivened personalities who have parabhakti. The verse says, Yasadeve Dev Parabhakti and Guru Parabhakti. One who has, it says Parabhakti, which means superior devotion, which Prabhupada translates as implicit faith, because bhakti is nothing but the maturization, cultivation, development, and perfection of Shraddha. Ado Shraddha Tata Sarvasanga Bhajana Kriya Nartha Nirvati Ruchi Nishta Ruchi Asakti Bhav and Prem. So this bhakti, bhav, and bhakti, this prema bhakti, and bhava bhakti is nothing but the fullest expansion and expression of the beginning Adi Shraddha, initial faith in Guru and Krishna, which grows and grows and develops and develops, and finally presents herself in her most beautiful form as Bhakti Devi and Bhava Devi and Prem Devi. Only those great souls who have implicit faith in Guru and God, they realize all Vedic knowledge. Well, this is the ultimate place to put our faith, and everything will be manifested there. If we put our faith in a woman, then we'll be cheated. Or a man attached to a woman. In Prabhupada's purport, he quotes Chanakya Pandit, the great politician and moral instructor. He says moral instructor, not that he's a Mahajan. He's not a Mahajan, he's a moral instructor on morality. He said, Vishwaso naiva kartavya strishu raja kuleshu cha. Never put your faith in a woman or a politician. So that's basically his phrasing of the same verse from the 8th canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 9. Bhagavan Vishnu incarnates as Mohini, the Mohini Murti avatar, or the descent of Lord Vishnu as Mohini Murti, Bhagavati Mohini. 8th canto, chapter 9, text 10. So Prabhupada comments, thus in this verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is pretending to be a woman, Mohini Murti or Mohini avatar, warned the demons against putting so much faith in her, for she had appeared as an attractive woman, ultimately to cheat them. Then Prabhupada paraphrases, or maybe it's Vishwanath's Tika, we don't know, because Vishwanath often paraphrases. In the purport, Prabhupada says that Mohini said to the sons of Kashyapa, how is this? You are all born of a rishi, a great rishi, Kashyap Muni, Yet, you're putting your faith in a woman who is loitering here and there like a prostitute, unprotected by father or husband. Women in general should not be trusted. And what to speak of a woman loitering like a prostitute? So women as a class are often referred to as kamani, and that sounds like the word kam, which means desire or lust, because it's significant, because young, beautiful women are usually referred to as kamani, not old hags, old jara rupes, old dragged out women are not so much called kamani. But kamani refers to especially beautiful young women, like Mohini Murthy is appearing as a beautiful young woman. So kamani, the word kamani means women, yes. So women cannot be trusted, I guess, as a category, according to this verse in Bhagavatam, spoken by Mohini Murthy. But especially young, beautiful women, who are called kamani, beautiful young women. Why? Because they're called kamani. Why are beautiful women called kamani? Because they invoke the dormant, lusty desires of a man. So because young women have that power, invincible power to bewilder a man, Mohini Shakti, all beautiful young women have Mohini Shakti. They have a part of Mohini Murti's, Bhagavati Mohini's power, Shakti, a portion, atomic portion, Anu Mohini Shakti, an atomic particle of bewilderment, which is all it needs for a commonplace human being to bewilder him completely. So a beautiful young woman can bewilder the mind of a man and fire up his lusty desires. So Mano Samhita, the law book for human beings, warns us that, or advises us that every woman, especially a kamani, a young beautiful woman, should be protected either by her husband, her father, or by her grown sons. Without such protection, a woman will be exploited. This is a very interesting point made here in the Srimad Bhagavatam for our understanding that faith is our asset of the human being, and it should be deposited with Guru and God, or with women who become transcendental and men who become transcendental. Because Chanakya Pandit is saying, don't put your faith in a woman or a politician. But frankly speaking, in the age of Kali, that's all there is. Every man is a politician, and every woman is a prostitute, loitering here and there in the shopping malls and airports and train stations and all public places. There's so many at the bus stops and metro stations. There's so many young, beautiful kamanis wandering here and there, walking back and forth to work. There's no husband anywhere to be seen. They don't have one. They're not married. They're young professional women. There's no sons anywhere to be seen. Impossible, because they're not married and their father is long gone, living in another city or dead or forgotten. So there they are in every city of the world, thousands and thousands of beautiful young women wandering unprotected everywhere in shopping malls and transportation places. And men, seeing that kamani form, Mohini form, they become agitated and get themselves in trouble, and the woman also exploit the woman. Now, this is a sad situation. So Chanakya Pandit says, don't trust a woman or a politician. So all the men in this age are politicians, so they can't be trusted. You can't put your faith in them. Whether that man is your husband or your brother or friend or whatever. And you can't put your faith in a woman, according to Chanakya Pandit, the moralist. You can't trust a woman or a politician, so you can't trust or put your faith in a woman because she's like a prostitute nowadays. And you can't put your faith or trust in a man because he's a politician doing so much diplomacy and shenanigans to get his work done. Politics with his family, politics with his friends, politics with his business. Or else he gets right into it and becomes a politician. Wholesale, untrustworthy individual. The whole world is full of untrustworthy individuals, faithless people in a faithless world. So no one can put faith in anybody. So therefore the Shvetashvatara Upanishad's encouragement to put our implicit faith, our parabhakti, our implicit faith in Guru and God is a good investment. If a woman is acting godly or is a godly woman, surrender to God, or a man is a godly man, and they're a devotional man, a devotional woman, identifying with their pure Atma, then in that particular woman, that spiritually minded woman or spiritually centered woman, or God-centered, spiritually centered man, then they maybe we can trust that man or woman, because that woman who's become godly and spiritual and God-centered, she's given up her so-called prostitute nature, cheating nature, and that man, so-called politician man, has given up his cheating political shenanigans and dealings and schemes to become a devotional man, a Vaikuntha man, a spiritual man. So a spiritual man and a spiritual woman can be trusted, and we can put our faith in them. We would like to present it like that. But otherwise, any man of this material world and any woman of this material world is not worth putting your faith in, because it seems like it proves unsuccessful. When we put our faith in some man, we fall flat. If we put our faith in some woman, we fall flat. But we never fall flat and we never get defeated if we put our full faith in Guru and God. The demons were bewildered. Despite the warnings of Mohini Murti, her beauty overwhelmed them. Mohini, mo means illusion, bewilderment. They forgot that they had all the nectar right in their hands. And they thought they would get better nectar by enjoying Mohini. There's only one Mohini and there's thousands of demigods. But somehow they thought they could divide her up and enjoy her equally or something. Whatever it was, they became totally enamored, attracted, captivated, enchanted, and bewildered. So much so that they gave up the nectar in their hand and put it in her hands. Now they had nothing. They didn't have Mohini and they didn't have the nectar either. So this is, Chanaka Panda says, don't give up a sure thing for an unsure thing. So surely they had a pot of nectar in their hands that someone could get it, or many people could get it. But now the unsure thing was the opportunity to enjoy or possess Mohini Murti, which was not too sure, since she has all the power of God. So whether they could overpower her or take possession is highly doubtful. So they gave up the sure thing in their hand. So they violated Chanaka Pandit in two points. They put their faith in a woman, and they gave up a sure thing for an unsure thing. So they lost. So then she goes on, Mohini Murti, they're so bewildered, she smiles very beautifully and sweetly to further enchant them and captivate them. She says, listen, demons, thanks for the nectar. Now, if you're willing to accept whatever I do, whether it may be honest or dishonest, then let me take responsibility for dividing the nectar among you. So demons are not too good at making decisions. Hearing her sweet words, they became crazy and said, yeah, whatever you say, yeah, it's all right with us. So then the demons, they did all kinds. The demons and the demigods, they bathed and did all kinds of yagyas and rituals, and they sat down to receive the nectar. Then she came there and walked very beautiful, and her body is described so beautiful, and she's carrying the pot, and everyone was glancing at her beautiful features and smiling, becoming enchanted. Both the demigods and the demons were enchanted. But the snake-like demons are a little more crooked than the devotees. So Mohini Murti arranged separate lines to divide it according to her choice. So first she approached the demons, who were seated a little bit away from the demigods. So she did some more bewilderment. She did another moha act. Women are very expert at speaking to bewilder the minds of men. Because once they're bewildered by their beauty, then what anything else they do is further bewilderment. So if they're intoxicated and enchanted by the gentle, tender, sweet beauty of a woman, then everything, then they can say anything and do anything, and the man will remain bewildered and become further bewildered. So she said, listen, boys, I know you want this nectar and you're sitting here, but these demigods are really greedy and they really can't wait. They're very impatient to drink the nectar first. But you demons are very exalted and self-controlled and patient. So I'm sure you can wait a little bit. And I'll give a little bit to the demigods to cool them down. And then I'll give you the rest. And demigods are so bewildered by the personification of bewilderment, Mohini. They were happy with her kind words, and they said, sure, no problem. They were duly bewildered. So everyone was bewildered except one very clever demon named Rahu. So he disguised himself as a demigod, and he snuck into the assembly of demigods, and he sat between the sun and the moon. But when they were distributing the nectar, he got a gulp of it. And then the sun god and moon god, they complained that the demon had infiltrated their ranks. So Vishnu took his chakra and cut off his head as he was swallowing it. So his head became immortal. And he's a little bit angry and a little bit revengeful towards the sun and the moon because he lost his head because of them. He sat between them, so then he always comes between the sun and the moon and creates eclipses by trying to eat them up with his big head. So demigods, they just about finished drinking all the nectar. Then Mohini Murti revealed her form as four-armed Lord Vishnu in front of the demons. So it explains here that this is a very significant pastime. That although the demons and devotees, they also work with Kaladesha Patra. They both work with the time factor. They both work with place. They both work with a purpose or a cause. And they both engage in activity and ambition. They're the same. And in this particular time, the demons and devotees, they're both agreeing on all these things, Kaladesha and Patra. They both want to get the nectar. But the demigods got one result and the demons got another. Why? Because demigods always work under the shelter of the Lord, so they easily got the nectar. But the demons don't have the shelter of the Lord, so they couldn't get the object of their desires. So basically they were cheated in one sense, but they were cheated by their own demoniac desires. So when the demons came to realize what had happened, they became furious and they attacked the demigods. And the demigods were so enlivened and empowered by all that nectar, they defeated them. A huge battle broke out, and it's all described very elaborately. All kinds of noise, big sounds and roaring of lions. And the big kings of the demons, they fought together in pairs. Indra fought Bali Maharaj, Kartikeya, Taraka, Varuna, Haiti, Mitra Prahaiti. Yamaraj fought Kalanaba. Vishwakarma fought Mayadhanava. And Twasta fought Sambara. And the Ashwini Kumaras fought with Brishaparva. The sun god fought with Bali Maharaj's 100 sons, including Bana. Chandradev fought with Rahu. It was a big, huge fight. Lord Shiva fought Jambu. And Vibhavasu fought Mahishasura. The sons of Brahma fought Ilvala. It was a huge fight. And Shani Maharaj fought with Narakasura. And Brihaspati fought with Shukracharya. The guru of the demons fought the guru of the demigods. So this huge battle is described. Heads and horses and legs and bodies all over the place. Clouds of dust. So then demigods are getting all kinds of male and female carnivorous demons that were naked carrying tridents rushed at the demigods shouting, cut them up, pierce them. Bali Maharaj was creating all kinds of mystic illusions, flooding and burning up everything. And the demigods are very discouraged. Although they got the nectar, the demons were beating the crap out of them, as they say in America. So then the demigods took shelter of Vishnu. Vishnu came on the scene with eight hands, riding on the back of Garuda. So then Vishnu entered the battlefield. Then Kalanemi, he threw his trident at Vishnu. He threw it at Garuda's head. The Lord caught it and killed Kalanemi. Then Vishnu severed Mali's heads and Sumali. And he killed Malyavan. It was a huge battle. Then Indra got inspired and he was ready to kill Bali Maharaj, and the demons cried in distress. Bali stood fearlessly before Indra. Indra rebuked him, "You rascal! Now let's see if your jugglery will save you now." So then Bali rebuked him, and they would curse words back and forth as usual fight. Somehow Indra knocked off Bali. He fell from his airplane. And Bali wasn't killed, but he was out of commission for some time. Had a huge battle. Indra's getting really... Everybody's attacking Indra. He's no lightweight, that's for sure. He may be proud and lusty, but he can really fight. And describes his fight, and he became invisible. And he freed himself from all these different arrows. It's an amazing battle. It makes World War II or World War I look like a badminton game. Then he was fighting some amazing demon called Namuchi versus Indra. And he had all kinds of mystic powers. And so then Indra couldn't figure out how to polish him off. There was some Akashvani said, "Listen, this demon, Namuchi..." The Muchi. Muchi means dirty. Muchi. Says he can't be killed by anything dry or moist. Because he has some boon like that. So he had to think of some other way to kill him. So Indra thought deeply over the matter. Then he thought that he could be killed with foam from the ocean. Because foam is neither moist nor dry. So then Indra employed a foam weapon to cut off the head of Namuchi. So the rishis were so pleased with Indra's ingenuity that they showered flowers on his head. And all the Gandharvas sang and danced around. So now the main demon was out of the way, so then Vayu and Agni and Varuna, all the demigods, got fired up. And they were just slaughtering demons all over the place. And then Lord Brahma saw that all the demons were about to get annihilated in a mass genocide. So he dispatched Narada with some message. Narada came and said, "Listen, you're protected by Narayan, so don't go hog wild, don't go crazy and just annihilate all the demons. We need a few good demons around, apparently." So demigods gave up their anger and stopped fighting. Surviving demons took Bali Maharaj back to the hospital, and Shukracharya uses mystic medicines to bring back all the demons to a large extent, giving them Sanjeevani Ras. And then Bali Maharaj was grateful to Shukracharya for reviving his life. He became a very loyal disciple out of gratitude. And Bali offered him everything in his possession. So this concludes the story of Kheer Samudra Manthan. The demigods won. They got the nectar. But they really had to fight for what they got. The demons don't go down so hard. But ultimately the demigods, the devotees, were victorious by the mercy of Lord Vishnu. Although they have to fight and suffered heavy losses, but in the end, they're victorious. So devotees are also fighting a war against Maya, illusory energy. And sometimes we suffer heavy losses and setbacks and impossible obstacles and impediments. But in the end, the devotee is always victorious because he's worshipping Achyut Krishna, Ajit Krishna. The devotee never perishes. He's always successful. Because in life or in death, he remembers the Lord, Ante Narayana Smriti. By remembering the Lord, one attains the eternal association and company of the Lord.